Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and go to Egypt to talk with a young 17-year-old reporter, Jessica El-Sayed, with Youth Journalism International. Since her generation is driving the revolution, we'll get her reaction to Mubarak's bizarre non-resignation speech that has enraged Egyptians. Then we'll get an analysis of this moment of delusion and confusion as the Egyptian dictator defiantly holds on to power against the wishes of the increasingly angry Egyptian people demanding his exit. Elliot Kohler, the chair of the Department of Arabic and Islamic Studies at Georgetown University, who testified this week to the Congress, joins us. Then finally, we will talk with Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, about the budget cuts the divided Republican Congress are proposing. Let's now go to Alexandria, Egypt. I'm speaking with Jessica El-Sayed, who is a senior reporter with Youth Journalism International. She is in Alexandria, Egypt, a 17-year-old student, and you have just watched, as all of your countrymen and women have, Jessica, President Mubarak, make what was expected to be a farewell address, if you will, and instead he made this peculiar, defiant, recalcitrant, confusing talk. To just tell me, what's your reaction, and what do you take away from that?
Well, he pretty much left me and my family in complete shock and anger. It was completely unexpected that he would come out and say this, because few minutes and even hours before the speech was aired, there was a lot of speculation on whether or not he would come out and finally step down. So at this moment, Tahrir Square is pretty much on fire. We've even seen reports about people fainting, people getting heart attacks. It was this speech was the worst of I mean, this is his third, and even the two that he's done before weren't as provocative, I guess, to the people. He pretty much just came out and said, you know, I'm here, I'm not leaving, no matter what you ask. It's very difficult to take in, especially for people who are in the streets at the moment, families that, you know, finally felt that they would have justice, who their sons or brothers or wives or daughters have been killed during this protest. It wasn't an easy ride. I mean, a lot was sacrificed, a lot was done. Today is the 18th day since the 25th of January. And it seems that he just won't budge.
And Jessica El-Sayed, do you think that somehow there was some kind of an agreement behind the scenes? Why would everybody have expected him to resign, and including the President of the United States? And he's supposed to have pretty good information. Is it possible that he sort of half-heartedly agreed to something and then simply at the last minute couldn't bring himself to make the concession to leave?
Yeah, you're perfectly right. I mean, what happened was, a few hours before his speech, we've gotten reports from CNN, NBC saying that Mubarak will resign tonight. And these kind of reports just weren't available in our media. Jazeera didn't have this. Another channel called Al Arabiya didn't have this. And this is where we follow the demonstrations. So the fact that these kind of news channels were saying this, in the Middle East, we trust those sources because we know that they wouldn't ever run this kind of important news unless it was true. So we heard that the CIA was saying that there are reports about him leaving. Just these kind of reports that, you know, put these ideas, I guess, in our heads. A few minutes before the speech, there was a lot of celebration in Tahrir Square. In my house, music was playing. We started hearing, people cheering in the streets, cars honking, because we felt, you know, victory is near. And that's why it was extremely emotional, because, you know, just psychologically, it was a lot to take in. I personally think that Mubarak needs some kind of, I mean, his speech doesn't need political analysis. He needs, like, psychological analysis, because it seems that he just cannot back down from power. We still don't understand why it was said that he would resign if he didn't. Also, before his speech, there was a word by the general from the military, and he made a statement saying that the military and the army would stay with the people, would ensure that the people get their demands. So that gave us hope, too, because we felt that maybe the military finally decided to take a definitive position, saying that we oppose this, that we oppose the dictator, we oppose the regime, and stand 100% with the people.
Again, I'm speaking with Jessica El Sayed, who's a 17-year-old reporter in Alexandria, Egypt. She's a senior reporter with Youth Journalism International, and she, like all Egyptians, were glued to state television with the expectation that Hosni Mubarak would make a resignation speech. Instead, he made a very defiant and rather confusing speech. He mentioned, Jessica, foreign intervention, foreign plots, foreign forces that he won't bow down to. What is he talking about?
Well, I'm sure that he's talking about Obama's several statements saying that democracy needs to come to Egypt now. You know, I mean, the thing is that, and the way we see it from this point is that today there was a report that Obama has spoken to the King of Saudi Arabia, and that Saudi Arabia, you know, being the regime that it is, wants Mubarak to stay. It even offered Mubarak to pay. They offered to pay Mubarak the amount of money of U.S. aid that America used to give if the U.S. fails to give it. So I feel at this point, you know, Mubarak is finally showing his true colors to the West. This is the image that, you know, we've been seeing for a while, but this is what, you know, me and everyone else in Egypt has always wanted the rest of the world to see, especially the U.S. government, to understand that this man is just not right in the head. These statements aren't necessarily, I feel, you know, and this is just my viewpoint, but they're not just a political statement where they're saying, you know, I refuse, you know, foreign intervention. I think it's just him and his pride thinking that, you know, who are you to tell me to leave? His own people are telling him to leave. You know, if he turned on TV while he was speaking, he would have seen the millions of people with their shoes raised in the air saying, leave, leave, leave. So we're just as puzzled as you guys back in the U.S. because, you know, we feel that our message is very clear. Everyone has heard it. Why can't he understand it?
So, Jessica, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? There was an expectation before the announcement of Mubarak's address tonight that tomorrow there would be substantial demonstrations, and perhaps the people in Tahrir Square would march on the palace, on Mubarak's home, his palace, and presumably that would lead to a showdown where I imagine the military or the police or both would protect the Mubarak's palace, would they not? So do you I thought this speech tonight was going to avoid what seemed like, when I talked to people yesterday in Egypt, it seemed like Friday would be a bloody showdown. So what's your expectation, what will happen tomorrow?
Yeah, well, before the speech, we were all, you know, pretty sure that this speech would cancel tomorrow's, not cancel, but at least, you know, calm people down a little bit so you wouldn't have millions of people in the streets. But, you know, it was a complete opposite reaction. I mean, this is, his speech today is going to backfire completely. I think that now, tomorrow, is going to turn into just, you know, millions of people enraged by this. You know, if he wanted good for himself and, you know, for his own safety and for his own country, if he did love his country for real, he wouldn't have came out to do this kind of speech at this time, especially since he knows that tomorrow there'd be demonstrations. I think tomorrow is going to be the biggest, I can say, human gathering in modern history. Because even before the speech, it was said that 15 million people were going to be, were going to gather tomorrow. So this will make it worse. As for the presidential palace, yeah, these rumors, and not necessarily rumors, these plans were said to be done today, tomorrow. I'm not sure about them, not because they won't happen, but because I do have a feeling they might happen tonight. You know, just at a moment of anger, they might decide to march now, in a few minutes, tomorrow in the morning. You know, at this point, it's very hard to predict things because, you know, there's a new event every couple of hours. As for the military protecting the presidential palace, this is the kind of thing that we hope for and hope not to get disappointed. So we're hoping, and we know, because we know for sure from the army, that they will never hurt us. You know, they said it before, we will never point our guns at you. You know, the military have a feel of human, just human existence. You know, the police were just brutal. They don't care. You know, they treated people like sheep. The military aren't like that. You know, they respect human beings. They won't hurt, you know, his fellow brother, his sister, all the people in the streets. You know, the people in the military in Tahrir Square have lived with these people over the past, you know, 3 weeks. They've eaten with them, drank with them. You know, it's hard. So, you know, they're one family at this point. So we're hoping that this bond would prevent the military from stopping the protesters to go to the presidential palace.
But again, I'm speaking with Jessica El Sayed, who's a 17-year-old reporter in Alexandria, Egypt. She's a senior reporter with Youth Journalism International. And we're talking about Mubarak's speech to the Egyptian nation that did not meet any expectations and left both observers over here and Egyptians, citizens, completely confused. He did at one point say that he delegated some of presidential authority and constitutional authority to his vice president. But I think we should all remind ourselves when you speak about the military, Jessica, that Mubarak, Suleiman, and Sadat before him, they all came from the military. The people in Tahrir Square represent for the first time the possibility of Egyptian democracy that comes from the people, not from the military. Rule from the people, not from the military. I mean, aren't these facts?
Yes, that is true. At some point when we were sure that he was going to resign and that the military would take control, even in the statement that the military had made before the speech, if they were to take power, they wouldn't take it forever, or, you know, it wouldn't turn into a military state. It would be like that for a transitional phase until a civilian would take over and things would go, you know, back to normal. So Suleiman is just as bad as Mubarak. This is the thing that, you know, even some people here sometimes fail to understand, is that a corrupt regime, you know, someone who's corrupt will only hire someone who's corrupt. It makes no sense to say that the people under Mubarak's rule are any better. So Suleiman being in power, nothing has happened. He still doesn't want to understand that. People demand removal of the regime. It's been the chant that I've been chanting for the past week, that people in Tahrir have been chanting for the past week, and all the Egyptian governance. he fails to understand that point. Egypt does not have a democracy, you know, and now it's clear to the world, but this is something that people here live every day, and they're tired, and, you know, if the time is now to take back their rights, they're not going to stop. We all fail to comprehend why he, you know, chose to fuel the revolution even more, but clearly, you know, it is what it is, and the revolution, I believe, will succeed. You know, when will victory come? No one knows, but we're not giving up for sure.
And Jessica, if your prediction is right, that people in the square that are so angry at this bizarre turn of events, that they may start marching on the presidential palace as we speak. Even if, I mean, the intention is to do it tomorrow, but it may happen spontaneously. That's what you just mentioned. I mean, I guess we're going to have to watch the television, but it could get bloody. I mean, even though, as you say, the military have, before the speech, said that they would only be in a transitional period. When it comes down to a mob attacking the presidential palace, I can't imagine that won't get bloody.
Yeah, I agree. Sadly, but a certain mentality that we need to understand about the people in Tahrir and anyone who goes down to the demonstrations really is that before they leave their houses and before they go down, they put in their head that this could be, you know, the last time they're home, because the people in Tahrir Square are ready to die for this, for democracy, for freedom, for liberty, for justice, for so much that this country has been lacking for so long. There's so, like before, there's so much here that isn't exposed because of the regime, and you know, they can't brainwash a nation any longer, because, you know, there's the internet, there's TV, there's too much media and too much technology to have people blindfolded from the rights that they should have, you know, for all this time. So the people in Tahrir Square, you know, I'm not saying, you know, they want blood, or they're ready for blood, but yes, they don't want blood, but they're ready for it. If it means to them that if they were to get hurt or killed for the revolution, for the sake of Egypt's freedom, then so be it. In Tahrir Square, the pictures of the 300 that died, you know, are hung. They have their shirts up, their bloody shirts up, and, you know, not to scare the people, just to say that these people were just like you, and you know, now they're our heroes. So you know, even in my personal experience, before I went to the protests here in Alexandria, and those weren't as, you know, as violent as the ones there, I said bye to my whole family, because I understand the risks, and they all do, but they're ready to take them.
Well. Jessica, I know it's very late for you, and just one last comment, if I can get from you.
You
mentioned the shirts, the bloody shirts of all of the martyrs, the 300 that have been killed so far. Mm-hmm. I take it that when the executive from Google was on television with the very popular television anchor, which apparently had a profound effect. I don't know whether you watched that, but he talked about the real heroes being the people who died. So just describe that moment to you, because we're told that really brought the crowds out into Tahrir Square the next day.
Yeah, that's completely true. You know, even I went to the protest after that day. My mom did. Lots of people I know did. When the name is significant, because he just represents, you know, he's one of the good, you know, like I said before, the good of the Egyptian people. He's one of those people you know, he works for Google. You know, he has a great job, has a great home in Dubai. He has, you know, he just represents, you know, the dreams that all the youth of Egypt have. And here he is leading a somewhat, you know, luxurious life, even outside of Egypt, but still has enough patriotism and enough love for his country to put up the group We Are All Khaled Said, who's a man, a young man in his 20s, who was dragged out of a cafe and beaten by police in June, in my city of Alexandria. He didn't do anything at all, but, you know, this is the martial state that we live in. Police can come in anytime, beat you, kill you, do whatever they want, and get away with it. So, and that's what happened. They got away with it. So what Wael Ghanem did was he made a page on Facebook, called it We Are All Khaled Said, in Arabic, and, you know, just kept track with the situation, made posts, and it got a lot of attention. Later, after the Tunisian revolution, he's the one who made the first event called Day of Revolution for Egypt on the 25th of January. So I think, of course, you know, that's why the Egyptian government found him and took him into questioning. He was in their custody for 10 days. So he came down to join the people in Tahrir on the second day of protests. And since then, you know, his parents haven't heard from him, his wife hasn't heard from him, and it was a big deal. You know, how could a man just go missing? You know, and not how could a man. Well, this isn't rare. There are still lists of people that are missing now, but you know, being the person that he is, Wael Ghanem went missing. People were looking for him, and then turns out that he was with the government. He went on that show a few hours after he came out, so he is very much still emotional and still shaken by the, you know, by the whole process, because he was blindfolded for 10 days. He even refused, you know, to insult any of the people that took him in, and he just showed so much nobility and respect, even though these people, you know, tortured him. So it was really just great to see him back, and the fact that he came on the show in tears, you know, in love for his country. And what happened was the presenter, the woman that interviewed him, showed him pictures of the people who died, and that's when he hadn't seen them before, and that's when he really started crying, and that's what moved, you know, just the whole country was crying with him. You know, we were crying here, everywhere. I've just heard about, you know, old men and men crying at the TV because of Wael Ghanem. So, yeah, definitely next day, even people who weren't completely convinced with the revolution before were just like, no, you know, this can't happen to Wael Ghanem, and they were there.
Well, Jessica El-Sayed, I thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you.
From Alexandria. Again, she's a 17-year-old reporter in Alexandria, Egypt, who's a senior reporter with Youth Journalism International. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with an American specialist on Egypt who testified to the United States Congress this week.